This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, football,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With the 16th pick in the 2014 NFL Draft, the Dallas Cowboys select Zach Martin, guard, Notre Dame.
So instead of bringing in somebody that could potentially supplant Tony Romo, they bring in somebody to make sure nobody plants Tony Romo.
An all-time top five in the moment disappointment for me in the 15 years of working on the home of the Dallas Cowboys. In the moment, I was sitting next to RJ Choppy. Maybe it was Mike Fisher. I don't know whether it was Brad or Mickey Spagnola inside AT&T Stadium with the t-shirts printed up. I still have the t-shirts. Very comfortable. Johnny Jerry with the money sign as we were anticipating a ratings bonanza with Texas A&M taking over for Tony Romo at quarterback. Instead, we were left stunned, as you heard, with that background noise as the legendary Hall of Fame career of Zach Martin began. And yesterday, the big fella deciding to retire at the age of 34, 9 Pro Bowls, 7 All-Pros, member of the All-2010s team, and he retires. Maybe the stat I remember him the most for. He retires with more All-Pro selections than accepted holding penalties.
It's a sexy pick.
It was not a sexy pick, but it was the right pick. And I could easily argue it was the best draft pick of the post-Jimmy era.
Yeah, there's a case for it. Yeah, there's a case for it. Yeah.
Because I think it's the peak moment of Jerry's post-Jimmy era. It was the peak of it. Because that singular draft pick stabilized the offensive line. The offensive line had, you know, was not great in 2013 or 12 or 11. You know, it was transition. You bring in Tyron, you bring in Travis, and then Zach just stabilized it. Like that offensive line, we were sitting in the office. We were going to fly to Vegas and bet the under on the Cowboys win total before the 2014 season.
Yep.
And, you know, Zach completely transferred. The Cowboys didn't have an identity. We have, how many segments do we have? What's the Cowboys' identity? What's their identity? During those 8 and 8 years, you know, was it a pass team? Was it a run team? Was it a good team, a bad team? I mean, he gave them their identity. It was like, we have the best offensive line in football. That's our identity.
The very first pick ever made by Will McClay running the draft was Zach Martin. And he was, I mean, it does seem like just yesterday he was picked. Like, I can't believe his entire career has just flashed like that. I mean, that's just the passage of time, I guess, and how quickly it goes. But he was about as perfect of an offensive lineman as you could ask for. Like, if you're building a prototype, he really is it. Like, size. He's got the size, too. He could have been, I think, a Hall of Famer if he plays any of the five positions on the offensive line. He could have played center. He played guard. We saw him play tackle when he had to. He did it at Notre Dame. He was just so powerful, so balanced. The technique was absolutely perfect, and he was just as good of a run blocker as he was a pass blocker. He was absolutely fantastic.
He's one of those guys where the draft expert, whether it's Mike Mayock or someone else, goes, you got a 10-year starter. You know, you can pick the flashier player. You can pick the bigger gamble. But if you pick Maurkice Pouncey, if you pick Marshall Yonda, if you pick Zach Martin, you're good to go there for 10 to 15 years. That's that type of, all right, we know we're good here with the safety net.
Yeah, and scouts to this day will still talk about they knew something, they were watching something special when they went to the Senior Bowl that year, and it was one-on-ones, and the scouts kept, hey, match up Donald and Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Put Aaron Donald and Zach Martin on each other. And they were like, you could watch them battling and go, all right, these two are different. It's just the value of what a guard was. Like a guard who, and I mean, some people considered him a tackle at the time, but the value of where he went down at 16. But I mean, just absolutely, to me, he is the offensive version of Bob Lilly to me. And I know a lot of people would think of Witten that way, but like Zach Martin to me is this era's kind of Mr. Cowboy is how I look at him. And he is just probably the greatest player in the history of the Cowboys not to win a Super Bowl. It'd be him, Tyron, or Witten.
Where?
I mean throughout his career, didn't win a Super Bowl.
Okay. So not just with the Cowboys.
Yeah, not just with the Cowboys. Just period, didn't win one in his career.
Hmm. Let's just look back at that draft real quick for S's and giggles. One, Jadeveon Clowney, still playing. Two, Greg Robinson, who was supposed to be Larry Allen, going to the Rams.
What did he go, three? He lasted 3 years?
Blake Bortles, 3. Oof. Sammy Watkins, 4. Khalil Mack, 5. Still playing. Jake Matthews, 6. Mike Evans, future Hall of Famer, I think. Justin Gilbert. Totally forgot about him to the Cleveland Browns.
It's so funny to see, if you look on Wikipedia, the highlighted names showing that they were a Pro Bowler. And then there's a break and a bunch of highlighted names of Pro Bowler. And that break is the Brown selection.
That's Gilbert at 8. Anthony Barr, Minnesota Vikings linebacker. Eric Ebron, Lions tight end. Taylor Lewan, busting the boys. Odell Beckham to the Giants at 12. Aaron Donald, Rams 13. Kyle Fuller to the Bears. Ryan Shazier, the player that the Cowboys would have picked if on the board.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he would have been their guy. That was who they absolutely loved. Which it's sometimes it's better to be lucky than good type of thing. And not that they missed on the evaluation of that player.
He was a good player.
Yeah. He was not Zach Martin, though.
No.
That would have been a missed opportunity. It's just like James Francis was a good player coming out of Baylor, was a good player for the Bengals, but you're glad he got picked up. And then you're like, well, I guess we'll take Emmitt Smith.
Zach at 16, CJ Mosley, Baltimore Ravens at 17, and then you go to Calvin Pryor, Juwan James, Brandon Cooks, Clinton Dix, and old Johnny Football, 22, to the Browns.
That was a decent draft. There's a lot of guys still playing. I had to look up Jake Matthews. He's still out there.
Yeah.
That was 9 straight Pro Bowlers selected when you started with Anthony Barr and got down to C.J. Mosley. 9 straight Pro Bowlers went in that draft.
We just asked Zach Martin at the Super Bowl in New Orleans if he had made his decision.
I'm focused on getting healthy, right? I think people forget, like, I'm a free agent, so I'm not under contract with anyone. So first and foremost, I want to get healthy, and then when free agency rolls around, see what's going on, and then make a decision from there.
I think we kind of came away from that with a negotiation feel of, I'm going to play, it just may not be here. Let me remind everyone, I'm free and available, and the Cowboys have not locked me up to that extension. That's the way I came away with that, even though you had watched Zach over and over with the game film last year and talked about the decline. How did you weigh in your mind decline versus injury affecting his play that had dropped?
I think it was definitely a decline. It wasn't just he was hurt last year. He was hurt, and he'd been getting banged up more consistently throughout his career. Like, he had played a lot of football. Like, he came into, you gotta remember, he came from a tough physical Notre Dame program where he played there until he was 24 years old. And then he comes into the NFL and he's immediately like road grader, block for DeMarco Murray, Ezekiel, just playing really physical ball. So yeah, that wore him down. And he declined pretty sharply last year. I would say it was probably 60% on decline, 40% on injuries. But I did feel like when we were walking off of that bounty set, and we were talking to each other, because I remember we were, that was one of the things we were chatting about as we were walking off, was I did feel like, I think he's going to play again. Like, I hadn't felt that way at the end of the season, but I did leave in there, felt like he wanted to play. He must just have felt like, I can't get healthy. I can't do it, and I'm not going to be able to be the same player.
And then durability and consistency. Started 162 games. He missed more than one game in a season just twice. That's it. 2024 limited to 10 games because of that ankle injury that required surgery. And he did get that last payday when we were sitting there in Oxnard at training camp before adjusting that contract that guaranteed him $36 million over the past two seasons. That made him the third highest paid guard in the NFL. So he got a nice little send-off.
Yeah, he did. Not a bad way to go. That's what happened. You know, he knew that he was coming towards the end, wanted to get one last contract. And I assume he knew when he was talking to us about what he was going to do. I don't know.
Probably.
I don't know that in the 2 weeks since then that he had his agent call and say, okay, you know, who's already calling about me? You know, like, I don't think that's what it was. Maybe he just like realized, hey, I can't get healthy. I'm done.
Where does he fall, fan text? 877-881-1053 on the greatest Cowboys offensive lineman of all time. Is he two?
Behind?
Larry.
Yes, probably. That's probably where he goes, is number two. He's above Tyron.
Is he above Tyron?
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Tyron was great. Tyron just was not able to consistently stay healthy. And I feel like Zach's run as the best was longer and a more consecutive run than Tyron Smith had. Tyron Smith was at his peak, may have been better than Zach Martin, but Tyron Smith was, he was a supernova. It was like, just went up, burned out. I mean, he was about 4 years where he was the absolute best.
The only other one that the Landry Hat website throwing up
Rayfield.
Here. Rayfield.
Yeah. Rayfield took too long to get in the hall. Took too long to get the Ring of Honor.
I mean, people will tell you that all the time that the best offensive lineman anybody saw was Eric Williams before his car wreck. And that was, he would have been the best. And that 3 years he played, he was the most dominant.
They put Nate at four, Tyron at five, Eric at seven, Flozell at nine, Frederick at 10.
Flozell at nine. And who, sorry, who were three and four?
Three and four. Three was Zach. And four was Nate.
So Flozell Adams is a better player than Mark Stepnoski or any of the other like multiple time Pro Bowlers.
There was, I mean, look, this offensive line they just had, you know, with the Tyron Frederick Zach, and then the one in the 07 to 2010 or 06 really. I mean, the Cowboys have had a really good offensive line. Well, two different reincarnations of it.
Great Wall reincarnation. Yeah. We were trying to come up with a nickname for him. What are the Tolos saying?
Guys, everyone is in agreement with y'all. Everyone on the Fantex who is Texan so far says Zach is number two behind Larry Allen, and then Tyron three. A lot of people agree Tyron Smith is three.
Tyron, Hall of Fame?
Probably.
Let's see.
But it's not as much of a slam dunk as Zach is. Zach will go in the Hall of Fame. But, I mean, I thought Marshall Yanda was going to get in, too, and he still hasn't.
RJ did that study. We'll get into it a little bit later on the home of the Cowboys and Rangers, 105.3 The Fan. Thank you for being a Tolo. That stands for turn it on, leave it on. We want to hook you up with a Dierks Bentley ticket giveaway in the final hour of the program. We're going to have the junk drawer as well. But we have a new addition to the morning show. Said he's a big Tolo. Said he was a big fan. Let's actually put that to the test with the Friday edition of Sean and RJ. Just getting started on DFW Sports Station.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We are commercial free. No reason to go anywhere else as we get you to your weekend as quickly as possible. Thanks for checking out the Friday edition of Sean and RJ along with Cowboys insider Bobby Belt.
Let's talk about the offensive line. Zach Martin is retired. He is on his way out. Sad time. A lot of somber messages from former NFL or from current NFL players. Different guys talking about how great he is. I think Lane Johnson just threw out a tweet saying best ever to do it. So going to be in a period of change. And there's a lot of questions right now about how is Terrence Steele going to bounce back? How is Tyler Guyton going to bounce back? Should Tyler Guyton be flipped to the other side of the line? Should Brock Hoffman play guard or center? What should we do? There's a lot of different things, a lot of different changes. And with what did I do?
You didn't do anything. Real quick, one other note on Zach. Nick Eatman will join us to recap his career from DallasCowboys.com at 8 o'clock. But you know how everything basketball-related right now gets pointed towards Nico, whether he's involved or not, because we have so much vengeance and anger and frustration? The same thing happened yesterday with Jerry and Steven.
Oh.
People are now adding to the Cowboy list of legacy players who are leaving here without anything close to a championship. Romo, Witten, Dez. By the way, when Dez saw a list of this, he responded with a Jason Garrett slow head, wise-eyed open gif. He has it in for Jason, man. He goes after Jay Jeezy a ton.
I guess he and Micah are good now, though. They've squashed whatever weird tension they had. Micah and Dez are good now because Micah was like, this list will end soon. And Dez was like, I'll be celebrating there with you, brother, or something like that.
Romo, Witten, Dez, Tyron, Travis, Sean Lee, DeMarcus Ware. You could throw in your Greg Ellis's if you want. And now Zach Martin leaving with nothing close to a Super Bowl appearance. And people turn that on Jerry and Steven.
Yeah, it is a little bit like it's same, like you said, same sort of thing as Nico, just blaming it. By the way, I was going on a sales call yesterday.
Whoa!
And there was a mix up. And the person we were going to go hang out with was like, oh my gosh, sorry, missed my calendar. Let's reschedule. He's very apologetic. And then he's like, look, if you need to, just blame Nico Harrison for it. I'm sure he's probably responsible somehow for me not making it. All right, so let's listen to the new Cowboys offensive line coach, Connor Riley, because there are a lot of questions about how can they rebuild the offensive line. To me, I think the biggest factor in determining whether or not the Cowboys will bounce back next year is the offensive line good or not.
Who's the Zach replacement?
Tyler Book.
I think the Zach replacement right now is probably Hoffman. But here's the only thing about it is that it's like Joe Philbin had his favorites, right? Like Joe Philbin loved Terrence Steele. Mike Solari had his favorites. Mike Solari loved Brock Hoffman. So when Clayton Adams gets in here and Connor Riley, who coached Cooper Beebe at Kansas State, we're going to learn probably next week a little bit when we're out at the Combine in Indianapolis. We're going to learn a little bit and hear a little bit about who their favorites are and who they like. So right now we don't know. They may really love TJ Bass. Those two coaches may like, they may have somebody in the draft or a free agent that they really like. Will Hernandez is a free agent from Arizona. That was somebody Clayton Adams coached. Does he just love him and say,
he was bring him the next Larry Allen.
He was. And just bring him in and plug him in. So it just kind of depends on how the coaches start to fall in love with certain guys' work ethics over the summer. But I thought this was good stuff from Connor Riley. Very, very well spoken and very, you know, pleasant but commanding presence up there talking to us. And the big question is going to be on Tyler Guyton. Is he going to be a Mozzie Smith? How do you turn that around? And so he was asked, what do you think about Tyler Guyton and his future here in Dallas?
I see a tremendous, tremendous talent who has not, quite honestly, been playing offensive line there. And the sky is truly the limit for a young man like that. And there's going to be a process that's going to be involved with it. There's going to be a lot of hard work that's going to be involved with it. He and I are just getting to know one another, but he has a tremendous skill set.
Is part of it switching the right tackle when he switches over to the left side?
Yeah, I think that always presents some challenges. But even if you look at him from his high school into initially going to TCU. He was playing tight end. And then any time that when a coaching change occurs and you do transition from one school to the next, there's that whole next learning curve as well. So I think he's a tremendous, tremendous young man in my interactions with him, and I'm really excited to get to work with him.
And that's something that I think hasn't been pointed out enough, is that when people are trying to say, like, just move Tyler back to the right side, he'll be better there, he'll be more stable. It's like, that right side was still, it's not like he spent 15 years playing football in you know, middle school and then up through high school and into college and has just been a right tackle, and now you're asking him to change that. This is a position he just took up a couple years ago too, because like he pointed out, he was playing tight end. And so I think they felt like they're projecting out more. Does he have the footwork to play left? Does he have this? And he does. It's more about just honing it. I mean, we talked about it after the draft last year. I didn't anticipate Tyler Guyton was going to have a great rookie season. Because I think he's going to have a good career, because I think he's got the skill set to do it. But it was going to take time to mold it and put it together, because he's still very raw. And Connor Riley is a guy who's been in the Big 12 before and had experience with those kind of guys and is familiar with Tyler Guyton from those games. I think he's got a pretty good idea and a pretty good handle on what type of player he is, more than some of these other coaches that are just coming in.
Is replacing a guy like Zach or any player with just, oh, we think we can get by with somebody that we already have, is that not like kind of going on the cheap?
Well, what are you doing with the rest of your resources?
Well, that I'm,
if you
want
to go and spend on something big, then you are going to have to settle somewhere else.
You will.
Who's the guy that can get by?
Huh?
Like who are you thinking about in terms of a guy that can get by?
Well, you said, you think they can get by with, was it Hoffman. Moving mm-hmm. over there? Okay, sure, I'm sure they can, but like, you know, you're going from one of the best to ever do it to a guy we think we can get by with. I don't know, you know what I mean? It's just like, it just...
Hoffman was better at guard last year than Zach Martin was.
Would there be nobody at 12 that can do the job?
I mean,
that would be like let's seamlessly move into the transition.
Kelvin Banks at Texas. Does Will Campbell from LSU get down there? Like, I mean, there are guys who can play guard, but you've got a lot of needs. Hey,
Jerry would say you're going to have to apply. We're going to have to get by somewhere on your football team. So if you draft Zach's replacement at 12, you're going to have to get by with Jalen Tolbert. You're going to have to get by with Mozzie Smith. You're going to have to get by with somewhere on your team.
I guess what I'm saying is, the O-line to me is far too important. I could get by with a defensive player somewhere.
Okay.
I'd much rather get by. I think you...
I like
that point.
The
way this team is, I mean, the way this team has been over the last, 15 years, I mean, they really have shown they need a pretty dominant offensive line to succeed.
Yeah, I get you don't want to cut corners on protecting your quarterback and opening running lanes. I totally get that. I think that there's a case to be made that somebody can be a better unit player than they are an individual player. Okay, like Brock Hoffman may not be on his own the top tier guard or anything else, but he plays with a certain tenacity and a certain edge and things like that, that within the group of those five, the line plays better. They tend to play better, even if he's individually not their best interior guy. So we'll find out how much they like Bass versus Richards versus Hoffman versus just getting something else from the outside. Because whenever a coaching staff changes over, you got to go, are you their guy or not? Because that's something that we have to figure out and drill down on. Big key here is going to be physicality. That's something that Brock Hoffman definitely brings to the table. And Connor Riley says that's a top line item, is that this needs to be a more physical football team.
I think it's very well known that we need to have a physical identity, and we need to have the want to, and the grit that it takes to play that particular position. So the mentality is, and I was talking to a few of the guys yesterday, we are going to control the controllables, okay? How well we communicate, how hard we play, how physical we are. Those are things in my mind that we are 100% in control of, and that's the mentality that I want to go into this with.
And that's every single one of them, more than in the past when they've brought in other assistant coaches. A lot of times when you bring in assistant coaches and they start talking about things, they'll tell you about different things they like with bend, or like last year when Zimmer came in, they were talking about size on the interior and different things like that. this was every single one of them repeating physicality, physicality, toughness, run. And
there's we'll
a little, it's a, yeah, it's a little bit of a basic line, but it's clearly a concept that when you hear all of them talk, they, it's an issue of like, if you are loafing, you're not playing for me. Like there's a little bit of that sense, I think, from these guys. And I kind of wonder if that's why they went and dipped into the college pool this time around too, is because some of those guys who are trying to get it out of young players to begin with. Yeah. And got to be a little more rah-rah and things like that. So what does his ideal offensive lineman look like? This is what Cowboys offensive line coach Connor Riley said.
The measurables are always the first thing that everybody wants to talk to. But what is the makeup of that particular person? You know, how tough are they? How physical are they? What kind of grit? When I'm sitting there watching film, okay, how do they finish? Are they stopping and watching, or are they covering down to the football? That's something that's really important to me. You know, I tell guys all the time, the value, the measurement of value to this football team is going to be how close you are to the football, okay, when the play is dead. Mm. And that is something that, again, is so controllable. And, you know, yes, absolutely, you got to have a particular skill set. You have to have the measurables. You have to have the athleticism, all those things. But we cannot overlook what the makeup of that person is.
I love that. I haven't heard that before. I'm sure defensive coaches have talked about it. Not an offensive line coach. We're going to measure and partially grade you on where you end up close to the football.
Yeah, and that's saying, I want you out front blocking. I want you getting to the second, third level. I don't want you just saying, all right, my job's done and I'm hanging out here. They want these guys being just run. The GPS numbers that Mike McCarthy was always going, they just going to shred those papers. They don't even want to see what the numbers are because they just want to run them, for lack of a better term, run them into the ground. They just want to, like Aaron Whitecotton said the other day, I want you to sprint to the ball till your lungs are on fire, and then I want you to line up and I want you to do it again. And that's the kind of mentality that they're all, it's feeling to me, and I don't say this in any sort of a way that will make fans go, oh, great, we're getting this again. I'm not saying this. It sounds a lot like the way the Garrett era coach and staff talked about process and culture and, you know, effort and how they're really placing an emphasis on the control, the controllables, like he just talked about. That is definitely a Garrett staff type of line. Which there's wisdom to it.
There was I liked Jason. I thought Jason was a good enough coach. Like he was
a good leader.
Yeah, he had a really good culture. Really, I thought he was a good leader. I mean, he wasn't this X's and O's genius that everybody wanted to make him out to be. But I mean, I thought, you know, Jason ran a good program.
Another cut here. Tyler Smith obviously is the next in line in terms of the offensive lineman for the Cowboys. They hope that he's the one that will take the mantle and move forward as a Zach Martin type is the hope. He was asked for his early impressions of studying Tyler Smith's tape here in Dallas.
When you look at his the physicality, the athleticism, his change direction, you know, when Tyler hits something, it moves. Okay, that's one thing that I do know. It moves. So, and had an opportunity to meet with him the other day, and just a fantastic, fantastic individual. And we discussed, you know, there's some dominant things that he's doing right now, and there's a few things that he could probably tighten up. That, boy, that becomes pretty exciting.
I like that he's already first introduction coming to him with just, hey, this is what I think you do really well, and this is some stuff that I think I've seen that you might be able to do a little better, and we can work on these things. And a lot of times you'll hear these coaches, Zimmer said it when he got hired here, haven't even gotten around to Mike yet, haven't even looked at him yet. We'll get to that down the road. A lot of these assistants the other day were saying, haven't really gotten a chance to do that. It sounds like Connor Riley was a little different, that he, when he took this job, was, I'm going to know these guys and get a study, because he already had feedback to provide for them. And it makes me feel like we're going to see a little bit more of the nastiness to the offensive line, just the way that he's talking, the way that he's wanting to do things. Feels like we're going to return to that identity, I think, in that makeup, which is necessary in the run game.
I hope.
Last cut here, he was asked, because I think we're all curious about this, when these guys are coming in here and they're interviewing for these jobs, what was Brian Schottenheimer telling them, hey, this is what we're trying to build here, and get a sense of that?
Don't talk about the I word. No. You're not allowed to. You're not allowed to with Dallas Cowboys football. Like, it is a breach of code to talk about any type of identity of what you want to be. It was with Garrett, was with McCarthy, so don't be bringing up this word here.
Well, Brian Schottenheimer communicated the identity to Connor Riley, and then Connor Riley told us.
Yeah, absolutely. And Coach Schottenheimer's talked about it. And it's going to be a physical identity. And, you know, he's made it very clear that we have to win up front. And we have to win up front on both sides of the football. And then along with that, how do we take advantage of that physicality in utilizing play action game and getting the ball in the playmaker's hands?
Marty Ball, baby.
If he's telling you got to win up front on both sides of the ball, I think you can start narrowing down. You might be thin on both sides of the ball in the trenches. How are you? You might start needing to look in the draft. All right, taking a defensive lineman in the first round, offensive lineman in the second. Like, I think those are the positions. Trenches is going to be a big focus, I think, for them.
If every year you draft two offensive linemen, three offensive linemen, or two defensive linemen with your first four picks, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I love that.
You'll be stable, you would think, at positions of, you know, premium importance.
It's like a day three quarterback. Like, you want to throw a pick at that every now and then just to have that lotto ticket or to have that depth, perfectly fine for it. It's just, I think when we played Eberflus yesterday.
How about we throw a first round pick at a quarterback soon?
Okay. We played Eberflus yesterday. We just played Connor Riley here. I think what we need to have our eyes on when we're in Indy is the offensive lineman and the defensive lineman, because I think that's likely where their first two picks are going to go. Barring a massive talent falling to them at 12.
Here we go. It's hour number four of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a fantastic afternoon. Expressway's coming up in 20 minutes. LA Live's at 5:40. It's time now for an edition of Football's Finest, and let's learn all about this Zach Martin retirement here with the Chief.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we got the news in the last hour. Zach Martin hanging him up. He's all done. 10 years, 34 years old, made well over $100 million in his career, been banged up as of late, said thanks but no thanks. 7-time first-team All-Pro, 2-time second-team All-Pro, member of the 2010s NFL All-Decade team, a surefire lock for Canton. I saw this as a stat, Warren Sharp pointing this out. Zach Martin, almost 7,000 pass pro snaps in his career. He had zero accepted holding penalties in pass pro.
That's ridiculous.
I think he had 7 holding calls his entire career. He had more all-pros than holding penalties. But in pass pro, he never had a holding call that got accepted. And that was almost 7,000 pass pro snaps. That's kind of absolutely ridiculous. But he's absolutely an all-timer, one of the greatest Cowboys of all time. And he's been the best guard in football for pretty much his entire career. As respected as anyone that's ever stepped foot in that building or on an NFL field. And I just wonder, I know the injuries have piled up. He's made plenty of money. He's played plenty long. But do you think he would give it one more year if he felt like the Cowboys were actually close to contending?
I do. I think that's a big part of it, you know, and I think that's a realization that a lot of guys come to usually later in their careers, but it seems like Micah Parsons is hip to it right now. Like, hey, we're not team building like the best teams are. So I think if you're Zach Martin, you look around and you understand that, hey, we were really good in 14 and 16 and maybe 21, 22, 23 were pretty good. But this thing is heading in the wrong direction. My guys are gone. Yeah. You know, it's tough when, you know, you're sort of developing now. You're trying to rebuild. And as at that age, you know, what are your options? To go somewhere else? You're going to move your family across the country? Or are you going to go there by yourself and just not see your young ones for the majority of 6 months?
Exactly. Yeah,
that's a major life sacrifice.
Yeah, I can imagine if he still wanted to play and it's like, okay, but the Cowboys aren't contending. I want to play for a contender, but do I really want to move somewhere else, uproot the family or whatever? Probably not.
Well, the Midwest would make sense. Being he's from Indianapolis, you know, the family and all that's still kind of up there. You know, if he wanted to go back that direction. I thought that when Dawson was talking about Kansas City and places like that, that might be something. I will say this. I think his body told him he's played at such a high level.
Yeah.
Even if the Cowboys, I don't think this was a decision about how good or bad the Cowboys is. I think this is about legacies. I think this is about, like, going out there and not putting bad tape out. You know, that the fact that this year was so rough. What, this is the first time that he missed, Pro Bowls and All-Pros and all his career? And I think it's about when people talk about you, what are they talking about? Are they talking about the guy that, you know, played all those years? Are they talking about the guy that looked not too good the last couple of years? So I think this was more about his body telling him he can't play at the level that he's accustomed to. I don't think the Cowboys had anything to do with this. Just my opinion.
Yeah.
That he said, no, I've played at such a high level. I don't want to go out there and just not be that guy. And
that makes plenty of sense.
Yeah. And I think that's what he went through last year. I think that made him realize that, man, it's getting to be the end. It's getting to be, and he even thought about it before the season even started. Remember, he was hinting
that's
that
true. That's
he
true.
Was hinting that
we went into the season knowing this is likely the end.
Yeah, I think his body surely told him that.
Well, it's certainly understandable that that he is going to take it this way, and best of luck to him in the post playing day career. I mean, we know like he wanted to jump on with us for the players show a couple of years ago. It seemed like he started to broaden his horizons when it comes to. I mean, he was just at the Super Bowl radio row doing the bounty stuff, putting himself out there. So I do wonder which direction he's about to take this now in the post career.
Man, I don't think Zach Martin is media desiring. I mean, he was good when he jumped in with us, but like in every other situation. Now, sometimes there's a Randy Moss where the guy seems like he doesn't want anything to do with the media, or Rasheed Wallace doesn't want anything to do with the media, and then he retires and he dives in and he's great. I think Zach Martin could be great, but he's never struck me as a guy that, you know, wanted to talk a lot about football.
I would say he probably takes the same path that we've seen from Travis Frederick. Kind of continue.
Disappear a little bit.
Disappear, spend time with the family, and, you know, and then, but also be a guy that does his charitable work, keeps his organizations going that way, supports his other teammates, shows up for an occasional, you know, hey, we're going to put you in the Ring of Honor thing. He'll show up for that, you know, kind of a thing. But I think he's probably heading back up to the Midwest and going to just find him a place and just settle down and do what he wants to do. I don't think we're going to see very much of him.
Well, good for him. He deserves exactly that if that's what he wants, man. What a stud. What a great dude. Great player. Just everything that you want your great players to be. He was that. He is that.
I think some players don't want to play anymore when they can't totally crush.
Yes.
You know, some players, like they retire from basketball and they want to go play at the YMCA still. They're like, hey, this is nowhere close, but I just like having a ball in my hands and shooting and stuff. But I think there's other guys that when they can't, like A.J. Brown said after the Super Bowl, I love totally dominating the opposition, right? That's what I'm in this thing for, is that human on human, I have humiliated you on TV. You know, and I think for a lot of guys, as soon as they realize, wait, I'm just like one of those other guys, I'm not special anymore, the relationship with the game changes in a very big way.
Yeah, especially these days when you make the amount of money that these guys make, like there's no reason to hang on. You don't have to go out there and embarrass yourself for a couple extra years just because you need the life-changing money. That is already there. So I totally understand. And as a fan of his, I honestly prefer that. You know, I mean, I would love to see him have a turn back the clock year for the Cowboys and go bulldoze people for 16, 17 games. But I think it was more likely that you're just seeing the breakdown and now you're seeing Zach Martin turn more into just an average NFL player, which is still dang good. But you're used to seeing him be the best in the business. He's used to that.
Yeah.
And so I totally get being like, nah, I'm not going to let y'all see me at my worst just because I want to satisfy more competitive. I've been competing my balls off for forever. Yeah. Go ahead and throw in the towel. I totally respect this out of him.
Yeah, and I think that's a testament to, you know, being very, very front-ended, like, with your finances. Like, from the very beginning, thinking there is a scarcity to these resources. I think of Marshawn Lynch and Rob Gronkowski, two guys that never spend a single game check. And the flexibility that that gave them at the end of their careers, right? They're like, oh, I'm retiring. Oh, I've actually always wanted to play with the Raiders. Oh, Tom Brady wants me. Maybe I'll do that. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll go do media. Maybe I'll do reality TV. But the options that it gives you there at the end instead of having to cling to something for long-term security is huge.
Well, on the other side of the retirement coin, you have the report from Diana Russini that Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce is leaning towards continuing to play in 2025.
There he goes.
Which is surprising if you watched him play in the Super Bowl, and he looked like he was a total shell of himself and was just not anywhere close to the type of dude that we've grown accustomed to seeing. Thought he was going to be at his best, but maybe that bad taste in his mouth fuels him and Pat Mahomes for a one last ride type situation. But if I was the Chiefs, I'd be like, I don't know. Are you sure? Travis.
Right.
Think about this.
Yes.
Hey, we're giving you until March 14th, okay? Let's take it up until the midnight hour.
If you're, how do you think Andy Reid's looking at this, Brian?
I think Andy Reid is okay with either way this goes. I don't think he's, I think that.
He's not pushing out the door when you're getting long in the tooth,
no,
guy?
No. He's not. Matter of fact, remember.
Might be his only weakness.
Yeah, remember when you know, he's very loyal to his players. You say about how he traded, you know, Hill, but he kind of saw that, you know, what was potentially going to happen. There's probably a big mistake that they made. But I kind of feel like that he is going to respect any way that Kelce decides this. And there's a reason why they gave him the date that they did. He's due that $12 million. Roster bonus.
Yeah.
And so, but whatever happens, I think Andy will adjust. I think he will figure out a way, like, okay, we're going to need to go get a tight end now, you know, and they'll navigate it that way. I don't think it's one of these, oh, damn, what are we doing kind of things? And oh, I'm going to try and talk you into it. I think Andy's going to allow him to make his decision on his own and not force him to do it one way or another.
Well, speaking of the Chiefs, it looks like Mahomes Sr., remember when he got into that little scuffle with John Rocker in New Orleans? Uh-huh. And then they set up the rough and rowdy fight with Barstool. These guys are going to duke it out in the boxing ring. Well, it turns out he's supposed to be making his baseline money for this. Mahomes Sr. is going to make $85,000. And then depending on the pay-per-view numbers and if he wins, I guess he can make plenty more. But he's going to get in the ring with John Rocker for $85,000. And apparently Pat Mahomes' son, he is unhappy about the match rumors, and he's doing everything he can to pull his dad out of the fight.
Yeah.
Which, of course, he is. You're like, Dad, I will just give you $85,000 right now. I'll double it, and then don't go embarrass yourself and our family more than you already have.
Well, maybe he's really nice with his hands, you know? He's probably a better natural athlete than John Rocker, but John Rocker looks like dude lives in the gym.
Yeah.
Dude, you know? he is an absolute rock.
You're
going
to have to be a really good fighter to overcome that strength disadvantage.
You better be a technician.
I mean, sometimes somebody says something to you outside a bar, though, and you just want a piece of them. And maybe to Senior, like the $85,000 is icing on the cake. Yeah. He just wants to knock him out for whatever was said out there on that New Orleans corner that night.
I'll be looking forward to watching this, though, I will say. Like, what are we going to get out of this fight? It's going to be more sad than anything I imagine.
Is this like a summertime event? Is this a...
Barstool does a rough and rowdy boxing match.
They should do it out of West Virginia, I thought.
I have no idea the whereabouts or the timing. I think it's coming up maybe later this spring or something like that, but... Yeah,
I mean, even the greatest fighter of all, at least of my lifetime, Mike Tyson, was 54. Senior's 53, right?
So, and washed, well, by the way.
Yeah.
Washed.
Yeah.
Yeah. A real life lush.
He's having a great time. He's enjoying life as Patrick Mahomes' dad, you know, former professional athlete. Life is good, right?
Reaction time's a little bit slower, they say.
I mean, maybe John Rocker is at an advanced age and maybe a little top heavy with all the bench press and shoulder work that he's doing, that maybe he's going to be super off balance too.
I'm sure both of them are going to look awful in the ring.
Yes.
But Rocker has the ability to land a KO punch with just the strength that he's bringing to the table here.
He's 50.
Yeah, he's 50. So
yeah.
I wonder what the weight difference is.
I want some big gloves, right? I'm just going to try to use my quickness.
It's insane. I'm sure if I was Pat Mahomes right now, I would be begging my
dad. He's the GOAT, bro.
Through
all of this, he's still the greatest quarterback ever, bro.
Yeah.
His brother's a mess. His daddy's a mess. His girl's a mess. And I say this respectfully because my life's a mess, too. I can spot it.
Right? Yeah. Thanks on to no one.
Yeah.
I feel you on that, man. But the worst thing about this at this age, and I'm now less than 1 year from turning 50. Brian knows already about this, and we saw it with Mike Tyson. That's why people thought he was throwing the fight. But once you throw yourself forward, you can't stop
you can't
and spring
stop.
Back.
You can't.
You stumble, and you got to take a couple of steps to get your balance back. So it's just, it's going to be sad.
Maybe the satisfied the history
you
of
saw me fall in the parking lot at Avis.
I mean, you start going and it's like, crap, I can't stop this.
Momentum.
Seriously, he's not wrong.
I'm going to have to make this like 30-second rounds
he's
for
not
these guys.
Wrong.
Huffing and puffing.
God.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Chief.
Yes, sir.
Football's finest on a Zach Martin retirement Thursday here. It's the G-Back Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Expressway's next. LA Live 540. You will not believe who Brian thinks is better than Zeke was coming out of college. That's next here. It's the G-Back Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Here we go. It's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Our draft coverage continues. One of the most exciting drafts we've had in a while, with the Cowboys picking 12th. And joining us now is a friend of the show from several years ago. This might go back a decade now. Dane Brugler from The Athletic at DP Brugler on Twitter if you want to follow him and get access to his content. Dane, how the hell are you? Thanks for joining us.
It is. It's very good to hear your voice. It's. I think you're all right. It's been about a decade where I've been coming on talking about draft, and so it's been fun and happy to be on with you guys again.
It's great to have you. And let's start with the player at the top of a lot of fans' minds there in Ashton Jeanty. Do you think that would be the right use of that pick at 12?
It's certainly debatable. I don't think that's the answer to that question is not a right or wrong answer. There's plenty of reasons why you can make the case that Ashton Jeanty should be the pick. And there's some, ways that you can look at it from a different perspective and say, you know, we're better suited building up the roster at some of these other spots. And because this is a deep running back class, let's wait to the second round, third round, fourth round. And we still feel comfortable with the guy we're going to get at that point at the running back position. But, you're not going to feel regret drafting a talent like Ashton Jeanty at number 12. He's so talented running the ball, catching the ball, blocking. He can do everything. It'll be interesting to see how he tests next week at the combine. I don't think he's going to be some superstar Saquon Barkley necessarily, but he should test well. He should be, what you would expect from a guy you're considering drafting in the first round. And above all, the character is off the charts. This is a guy that you talk to the high school coaches, you talk to his college coaches, and he had all types of offers this past off season to go play for a team in the SEC, a team in the Big Ten. Upwards of we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars that he turned down in order to go back to Boise State because that's the program that believed in him coming out of Lone Star High School. So. There's a lot of reasons why you can look at Ashton Jeanty and say, man, this is a guy we want in our building, want on our roster, the way he can impact everybody around us. So I certainly think it's something that the Cowboys will be talking about extensively as they build that board.
My concern at 12 after listening to Brian break it down for months now already is, the potential of a high risk, high reward player at 12 and missing on the third round basically for 3 years in a row would be tough to overcome. Are there other players beyond Jeanty who you feel like are likely to be there and are almost as close to a sure thing as you can get?
Just talking about at any position?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a weird draft because at the top you have your Travis Hunters, your Abdul Carters. I think those are the top two guys in this draft. And then between, I would say, 3 and, 12, I think is the next tier. And so, ironically, the Cowboys picking at 12, I think that they're in a spot where they should feel comfortable getting somebody from that second tier of players in this class. Whether that ends up being Mason Graham from Michigan, the defensive tackle, could he make it to 12? I know a lot of people don't think that he will, but he might get beat up next week at the combine because his arms aren't going to be super long. He's not going to be the best tester out there. The tape is phenomenal, but Mason Graham might not be one of those guys that is super traitsy, even though I think he belongs in the top five of this draft. You could look at a few of these defensive linemen, whether that's Shamar Stewart from Texas A&M. Now, you talk about bust potential. He certainly has that. But Shamar Stewart is going to put on a show next week in Indianapolis. The guy's 280 pounds, and he might run in the 4.5s. That's how different this guy is. So, you know, offensive lineman, Will Campbell from LSU, Armon Membu from Missouri. It's an interesting draft because of the way things play out. One of the guys that I think will be on the Cowboys' radar who has a lot at stake at the combine is Will Johnson, the corner from Michigan, who I think could be in play there at number 12. The tape was really good in 2023. This past year, he was banged up quite a bit, got beat a few times. The question will be just the pure speed. And I think the jumps will look good at the combine. I think the agility will look good at the combine. But what's the 40-yard dash? We know the combine or the cornerback position is a stopwatch position. And so will he be able to run a sub 4.45 in the 40-yard dash? And that's even if he chooses to run. We might not see Will Johnson run a 40-yard dash ever again, yeah. Which I think would be a tell that, hey, those numbers aren't where he wants them to be to put a definitive number on paper for scouts.
I love the idea of the Cowboys taking a corner at 12. You mentioned Will Johnson, corner out of Michigan. How much better do you think he is than, say, Texas's Jahdae Barron?
Well, I think they're two different, you know, just like with receivers, you know, you've got inside receivers, outside receivers, right? And with Barron, he played a little bit of everything in that Texas secondary, inside, outside, played some safety, played some in the box. But I think that his profile, the way that he's built, the way that he plays, teams are going to look at him as an inside player. You know, he's like some teams have strict size thresholds in terms of length. He might be under 30-inch arms. And for a lot of teams, that's automatic X for an outside cornerback spot. So now on the inside, that might be a little bit different. So I like Jahdae Barron. I'm just not as nearly as high as some other people and talking about him as high as the top 15. I like Jahdae Barron into the first round, into the second round. I think, you know, he might get beat up a little bit just because the physical traits, even though the tape is good, the versatility is good, the physical traits aren't exactly what a lot of teams look for at the position.
Dane, it's good to hear your voice again. The wide receiver room, and I was watching Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft with some interest because of his, you know, him being a former NFL scout and the connections he has. He had Tet McMillan getting all the way down to 19 to Tampa Bay. Is he telling us something that we don't know talking to teams? Because it always seems like that McMillan would be a guy that everybody's talking about potentially in the top eight. As far as the first wide receiver off the board, but he gets him all the way to 19. Is there something we're missing there?
No, I don't think so. I think that's just the nature of this draft. You know, last year it was pretty easy with Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, you know, but even a talent like Brian Thomas Jr. fell all the way to the 20s,
sure.
You know, which was a little surprising on draft day. So with a guy like with Tet McMillan, it'll be interesting to see what he runs next week at the combine, what his 40 is, because that vertical speed is kind of the question mark, right? Mm-hmm. He's a guy that is super loose. He's limber. He's a ball winner. He's almost like a Gumby-ish version of a T. Higgins,
sure.
Where speed's not exactly the reason you're drafting him, but you want to at least see a 4.52 number or something better than that just to kind of check that box and say, okay, well, he's not a burner, but he's not slow either. So I think there are going to be a lot of teams in the top 15 that I think are going to look at the trenches and say, let's get our offensive linemen, let's get our defensive linemen, and maybe, you know, pass on a few of these receivers. But McMillan's got a wide range. He could go as early as 5.
Right.
He could fall, you know, into the early 20s. I don't think it's a huge shock just because of the nature of this draft. It's just a really unique class this year.
Dane, I know on my board there's 3 guys that have injuries that I really, really, mm-hmm. the tape is good. When you talk about Josh Simmons from Ohio State, the tackle, yeah. Revell, the East Carolina cornerback, and then also, too, Benjamin Morrison, the cornerback from Notre Dame. How do you navigate those guys?
Yeah, and that's why the combine exists, right? So we can get these guys, get the exact medical info, and it's a big step in their evaluation, especially a guy like Josh Simmons, who, based on tape, he's a top 10 pick, right?
I mean, absolutely.
In October, he looked like he was going to be OT1, and then he had the non-contact knee injury, the patella. what does it look like at the combine in terms of his rehab, recovery? What's the prognosis long term? Any long term effects that teams should be worried about? And, you know, I mean, Brian, I know you know this, but yeah, just, you know, for the listeners, with the medicals, you know, a lot of teams, they do it differently, but some teams, they do it with the numbering system. So if you're if the team doctor gives you a 1 or a 2, you're in good shape. 3, okay, borderline, but you're probably okay. If you're a 4 or 5, you're probably off the board.
Yeah.
And so, you know, teams are going to look at these injuries and kind of gauge their interest. Every team's different with the risk. And, you know, just like scouts, medical professionals give different opinions about how they view certain things, especially a serious knee injury like a patella. But I'm told that he's right now, he's ahead of course, you know, he's ahead of where he's, you know, was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And the plan is to for him to have a personal pro day in April so he can work out for NFL teams before the draft. That's the plan right now. So that'll be interesting. And then, yeah, you mentioned the two corners, Siobhan Revell. And actually, I've got a phone call with him tonight just to kind of check in with him, see where he's at. But he's a super freaky guy. It's a bummer we don't get a chance to see him work out at the combine because of the ACL. But he's a guy that's overcome a lot. I think that he's still going to be in that top 35, top 40 mix as long as the ACL checks out okay. And then Benjamin Morrison's a little more complicated. This is actually his second hip surgery, lateral tear. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about a corner that's not even 22 years old yet and is already on a second hip surgery. It's a little unique, you know, not something you hear about very often. So what the medical feedback is on Morrison will be huge to ultimately where he ends up being drafted.
Yeah, and I'll follow up with that. And I'm kind of thinking about 44, you know, where the Cowboys mm-hmm. are. Is a possibility that one of or these three guys could all be, because of medical issues, be there where Dallas picks in the second round?
Yeah, I mean, back to the Dallas special, right? That second round where you kind of take that risk, that Jalen Smith. And, yeah, you know, it's always worrisome because if a guy like Josh Simmons makes it to you at 44, man, that's team's pretty – it must be scared off because the talent, again, it's top 10. So, you know, but that's why you pay your medical team, the trainers, all that money, because that's you trust their opinion and you don't deviate from that. It's not like – you know, you don't go get another second opinion. You trust your team doctor, your team physician, and all the trainers to come up with a grade on the player. And if they say, like, yeah, there might be a little bit of risk, but we feel okay drafting the player, then okay, that's what you go with. That's how you build your board. And so it'll be interesting. I would be surprised if Simmons made it that far. I really would, just because there's too much talent and teams need offensive line help. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, knowing the rest of the league and their luck, the Chiefs will fall into them at 31 and, you know, they'll be set at left tackle for the next 10 years. But Benjamin Morrison and Revell, I think those two guys would be possibilities there. I think it is a possibility that both those players could be available at 44.
How do you handicap the defensive tackle group? And I'm kind of talking about the one techniques here. You know, you mentioned, you know, Graham could probably play the 1 or the 3, but how about Grant and Williams from Ohio State, Harmon from Oregon? How do you look at those guys as far as where do you think they might go? That's something that Dallas is clearly going to look at, probably even a 3 technique if Oso Digizua doesn't resign.
Right. And so if no Digizua, then you look at, okay, who's the best penetrator as a 3? And I mean, Walter Nolan's probably the answer. You know, he has really disruptive qualities. He can win at the snap. The tape is a little bit up and down.
Sure.
I don't know. I mean, do you think that's early at 12 for him?
I think I think it's way early. And the way you described it, I was really kind of nervous about that, but I believe in that room, they really don't care what you and I think. You know, we're going to do our work, but there, I feel like that they like Walter Nolan a lot better. The fact that Daniel Jeremiah had him at 12 made me think, like, all the players he could have taken for Dallas, he put Walter Nolan there at 12. And I think a lot of people think that's rich, but he's probably got that from somebody that you know, hey, we really do like this guy.
Well, and I think that, you know, the exact way that you set it up, you know, Digizua, if he moves on, all of a sudden, you know, they really need to find an answer there. And so I do think that theoretically it matches up. Nolan's also a guy that, you know, teams have to be comfortable with. You know, we mentioned the medicals at the combine, the character and the interview stuff. That's a big part of it. And Nolan's a guy that, you know, not everybody at Texas A&M talks glowingly about his time there. Now, the feedback from Ole Miss, a little bit better, but, you know, still something that teams are doing extra homework on. Kenneth Grant could be in that mix. He's a guy that is 350 pounds, but he can move. I mean, the combine should be fun watching him work out. He could be in that mix. I like Tyreek Williams a lot as a borderline first round guy. He against a run, he is just outstanding. But the strength of this defensive line class is just the depth. You know, you talk about Alfred Collins from Texas in round two, Shamar Turner from A&M, Darius Alexander, Toledo. And we can go on with the amount of defensive line talent that I think the Cowboys would be able to find at 44 as well.
It's Dane Brugler here of The Athletic with you in the G-Bag Nation. Do you think Tyler Guyton's good enough at left tackle? Are you wanting to continue to develop him, or how urgent would your, you know, process be right now when it comes to how important that spot is on your line?
Yeah, I think it's a question mark right now. But for those of us on the outside looking in, but then also, you know, just trying to get a feel for how the coaching staff feels. You know, obviously the new coaches, but some carryover. And so how do they look at the nature of the line, and do they feel like an upgrade is needed after just 1 year? Obviously the Cowboys are a team that it's not like they drafted Tyler Guyton in the top 10. I mean, they traded back and still were able to get him where they did. So it wasn't like this was a perfect ready-made player out of the box. It was going to take some time, and there were certainly ups and downs on his rookie tape. So what's the feeling in the room about how much of a leash we're going to give him at left tackle before we say, all right, we need to go find some more competition? But, you know, offensive line depth is never a bad thing. So if you have a chance to go draft another tackle, it's not something that should be completely ignored, I don't think. And especially in a draft like this, where the tackle talent falls off pretty quickly. So if you want one, you almost have to take one at 12. And, you know, but there'll be some good candidates there. I mean, Will Campbell from LSU, we'll see if he gets out of the top 10. I love Membu from Missouri. To me, he's a guy that at 20 years old, you feel great about him at guard or tackle. And it's kind of like Guyton, where there's going to be some bumps along the way, but you feel great about him for the long term, really helping your offensive line, and he can do it in multiple spots. So, yeah, there is a lot of different ways the Cowboys could go at 12, and I certainly think that offensive line is in that conversation.
Dane, in the last couple minutes we have you here, okay, I don't take Ginty at 12. I'm going to assume that Johnson, Hampton, potentially Henderson could be gone by 44. Could you give me a back that you like, or backs that you like, if, say, Ginty, Johnson, and Hampton and Henderson are all off the board, and you're probably looking at maybe a third-round situation?
So I feel like I'm higher on him than most, but I think Jordan James from Oregon is just one of the best running backs in this class. Like, he deserves to be talked about as he made my top 50. Yeah. So I think that he could still be available in the third round, and if he is, I really like how he would fit what the Cowboys want to be. He's not a home run hitter, but, man, he might lead the league in doubles. I mean, he is the type of guy that finds success on every run. Success might not look like an 80-yard run, but it might look like an 8-yard run.
Sure.
And that's the type of guys you want, who they consistently get more than what is blocked for him. So, and Jordan James does that consistently. He can catch a ball out of the backfield. I'm a big fan of his, and I think that when it's all said and done, when we look back at his draft class, we're going to say, man, Jordan James should have been drafted earlier.
What kind of a cooker are you throwing down your Texas barbecue on these days, Dane?
Man, I stick to my Texas roots, even though I'm not in Texas anymore. So it's a lot of beef, a lot of, you know, the black pepper and salt go heavy. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking out my window right now at nothing but cold, but snow, about 6 inches of snow. So it's a little bit different in terms of what I can do and what I can get away with up here at this time of the year. But, man, I'm looking forward to April and May when things really warm up and I can get back out there, get the brisket going. And so it's definitely a staple of my pre-draft prep once we get to April.
I become a beef short rib guy myself. The brisket's too much for the family. I know you know how that is.
Mm, yeah. Oh, no, that's do you do the Do you do the rack or just the the separate ribs?
No, those dino bone. Yeah, the separate ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I know. Those are little morsels of heaven, right? Oh, I mean, you could get them cooked right. Yeah. Do you sauce them or just do seasoning?
Yeah, just season it. Wrap them after about four hours, and I find the morsels to be more consistently delicious as well. And it's, for whatever reason, they're harder to screw up than a brisket.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Absolutely. And I don't know. I know my grocer doesn't always carry them, but when I find them, I always grab them because they go quickly. Because I think the secret might be out on those things.
No doubt, dude. Yes, it is. Thank you so much, Dane. We'll be following your content at DP Brugler on Twitter. Dane Brugler, draft guru. Salute to you, sir, man. Have a great draft season.
You too. Take care, guys.
Let the jokes pour in on the Franklin Franco injury attorney text line about the Cowboys and Stephen Jones not spending with the salary cap increase yesterday. Good morning, Metroplex. Sean, RJ, and Bobby with you here on DFW Sports Station 105.3 The Fan, otherwise known as your official home of the Cowboys and the Rangers. The salary cap is going up, going to fall in the range of $277 and $281 million. That is an increase from last year's cap of $255 and the 2023 cap of $224. So about a $53 million spending increase for teams over the past two seasons.
Yep, and just year over year, about $26 million. And there were a number of teams, Cowboys were one of them, that this time last year believed the cap was only going to go up $10 million. So a lot of the...
But wait, Jerry Jones, with much arrogance and confidence, tells us, I'm basically plugged in, all right? Nobody knows the salary cap like I do. There's no other MRF-er that can general manage like I can. And the one thing I have down pat, all right, and he came off with this arrogance during the Schottenheimer press conference, I know the cap increase and you don't.
Yeah, and it's $16 million over what they thought. Potentially, I mean, it's going to be as little as 14 over what they thought, as much as 6 or 12 and as much as 16. Either way, it was off. And that's, in some ways, you can look at it as, look on the bright side. There's more money, more flexibility. But the other end of it goes, why were your projections so off? Who was responsible for the projections? How does it compare to the rest of the league and how prepared they were for the bump? And how did it impact financial decisions you made? If you knew you had $16 million extra, are you signing Derrick Henry last year?
Right.
That's the question that probably needs to be asked of Jerry next week in Indy.
So now let's spend it.
So why does it matter what their projections were? You could change things. It's not like, you know, they found out the salary cap was going up after free agency.
What do you mean, why does it matter? Like, why does it matter what their projections are for how much money they'll have to spend?
Well, yeah, because, like, you know, let's just say you find out yesterday that you have $12 million extra to spend in 3 weeks. That doesn't change anything for
you. Yes, it does. Because Derrick Henry, his first year cap charge, that was the whole point. His first year cap charge was low, and they were saying, you sign him to a 2-3 year deal, you're not going to be able to carry the weight of the bigger deal.
Oh, you're talking about future year. Okay, I thought you were talking about this year's offseason. Like, I don't... Yeah, okay. All right.
No, I mean, this year's offseason, yeah, they'll know the number and then they'll go. It's more about last year, how did you spend?
Yeah, how did the projection affect last year's offseason?
Well, they told us it affected them.
Well, I think they... Because, like, you know, to me, I'm just looking at it from that individual year. You know, the future years, there's no way to project the future years because you don't know what revenue is going to be like the future years.
But you have to. Like, I mean, you do have to project it out. Like, the Cowboys and all other teams... They will generally, so for instance, it's 2025, they probably have projections out right now till 29 because they've just got to have a baseline of here's how we're going to operate. Even if it's, I think most teams operate on a conservative end because they don't want to overestimate and then they're making big cuts. Green Bay had to do that a couple years ago. So I think generally what they're doing is slightly underestimating, but I think the Cowboys thought it was 10, so they may have been operating like 8 as a bump or something like that. And that does impact how do you choose to split somebody's cap charge? How do you choose to front end somebody's money? And that's something that that projection probably impacted things.
It doesn't matter anyway. They're not going to spend the money.
let's get down to it.
Let's be fair. They're just not going to spend the money either way. They don't have an extra $22 million. The NFL didn't inform the Cowboys in the league that they have an extra $22 million to spend. They inform the Cowboys that they get an extra $22 million.
Or, I mean, as
the pocket or wherever they want to do.
The Cowboys, the way the Cowboys probably view it, I would guess, is that's potentially $16 million worth of Dak's cap charge we don't have to restructure and can just eat on this season. That's how I would imagine they look at it.
Mm-hmm. Or as RJ maybe suggested, is this some wiggle room with Osa to play around with?
Maybe. Now, here's the thing. I don't know. Like I said, as of last summer, I know their projections were around 10. So that impacted how things were. But they may have gone through this season and those projections may have shifted. It wasn't really a discussion, so we don't know how it shifted. But if they did have a better idea of that, they may have already been accounting for that with Osa. But I mean, this, as big a bump as this is, this bump only just now took the Cowboys salary cap to break even. Because they were like $14 million in the red before this projection yesterday. So they were going to have to move around $14 million just to get to even. So all this does right now, it gets them to even. Now they still got to make moves just to free up money. So, I mean, that's why they've talked about how tight things can be around here. And the main point from that, though, is still, yeah, but it's kind of your fault in the way it was managed why it's tight.
Lawrence Taylor sitting down with the Outkick podcast. I believe this was in New Orleans, and Micah Parsons' name was brought up. LT said, quote, he's a great player, but guys, let's do more. Let's play more football and less podcasts, to which a lot of Cowboy fans absolutely loved hearing. And then the other portion of the Cowboys fan base said, oh, you mean like hookers and blow?
Yeah, like, you know, now listen, I don't think what Lawrence, this is like the same thing with Kellen Moore. Like Kellen Moore or any quarterback or any coach that was a failed player, just because they were a failed player doesn't mean they can't be a good coach. Just because you're a failed person doesn't mean that you can't be a good advisor. I don't care. You know what I mean?
I look at it a little different. I agree with the first part, but I don't know that Lawrence Taylor can be talking about what to do off the field when he was committing crimes off the field. You can't lecture me on like focus and off season this and that when you're Lawrence Taylor. I can listen to Kellen Moore talk about X's and O's and the way he sees it. You know what I mean? One is like conducting yourself and the other is right. Seeing something.
Because
I agree with your first part. I always have.
Can a parent who's gotten a DUI lecture their kids about drunk driving?
Well, yes. So do you look at that as the same thing?
Yeah, like I don't want a drug therapist who's never done drugs.
But gosh.
No, you see what I mean? Like, I don't want a marriage counselor who's never been married or divorced. You know what I mean?
Haven't you said before, though, that like...
A fat trainer.
But with your own, like with your own kids, haven't you said before that you're not going to tell the well, I can't tell them not to do something if I did it.
Right. I mean, that's the approach I take.
So then Lawrence Taylor couldn't, if he had problems on the field, tell Micah?
Don't use my own logic against me. Okay, all right?
Look, the hooker and blow stuff, that was meant to be a joke. What's the most important thing is, what does this actually do when Micah does these podcasts? Does it take away from his game or any of us? I've never sat here and there's been a lot of Micah Parsons questioning and criticism, but I haven't necessarily ever said out of my mouth, I don't think Micah Parsons is working hard. I don't think Micah Parsons is ready. We're never sitting there at training camp saying, Micah's huffing and puffing. He may not be in shape. We've never questioned that. So, you know, this is going to be a new generation, all-time sports discussion of, does doing a podcast affect your game? Is it a distraction? Does it take away? And does any of it even matter? Because as we talked about with Aaron Rodgers, when the Jets apparently told him, if you want to come back, no more McAfee, do you even have the right to tell a player that these days? Or are you just wasting your breath?
Yeah, I mean, it's a brave new world on that front. You're going to get all sorts of different questions that haven't ever existed for players before. But
Micah's podcast, to me, doesn't affect preparation. It maybe affects distraction.
And not from him, just headlines that are created.
Right, headlines.
And again, I don't know. I would imagine if Mike Bacsik, especially the way he's been acting lately, decides to do a podcast while he's doing his Rangers TV job, it would probably create some issues for us within this building of Mike just spouting off and, you know, creating radio headlines.
But it wouldn't take away from his broadcasting of a game, right? In the game.
Right.
In the game. And look, this is Mike's, he does the podcast.
But if Mike did the podcast while in this building, it could affect him because of things said about Corey
right
now in the moment.
When he has to come back on the show.
Come back within his teammates.
Yeah, right. Because, like, you know, Micah does this on his off day, the podcast, mm-hmm. right? It's off day.
No
right?
problem.
Like, who works on their off day?
Yeah, but, I mean, he does the podcast on his off day, but he does it in his function as the title that he likes to tell people of head of football content at Bleacher Report or whatever. I mean, that is a natural conflict that I think has come up for the Cowboys before, of just like, you're a football player and you're in season and you're supposed to be focusing on this. And then when you're the head of football content at Bleacher Report, a lot of your stuff that you're going to do there is driving engagement for your content and different things like that. And that's probably going to put you in a position to where you're going to feel like you need to say things or talk about things that the Cowboys view like are counter to being focused on the season.
Right.
And potentially if you're weighing in on, boy, the Giants are the dumbest team in the world for letting Saquon Barkley go, and you're saying that on your podcast, and then you're playing the Giants in a couple weeks, some guys may be like, why are you saying that? Don't even talk about it. I think that is
Or
reasonable.
Loving Jordan Love, right? Mm-hmm. Or having him right on, like, dude, this guy just kicked our ass. What are you doing? Why are you doing that? It's impossible to define on paper.
Yeah.
You know, you have to guess and have an opinion based on it affecting you. It's something in the air that you try to quantify.
Oh, I bet there are plenty of teammates and coaches and other people in the organization who don't even have an awareness of, I know Micah does a podcast. It doesn't bug me. It doesn't even. And then I'm sure there are other people.
What did Malik say about him? What was that thing between him and Hooker?
I don't remember what the statement was, but let me look it up.
Like,
but
Diggs is totally fine with it. And Malik Hooker or Tank Lawrence may not be, to your point of being split in the building. But what did Malik say?
My advice for Micah would be just make sure we're all right and being where your feet are, because if we're at work and the run game's terrible, but you're doing a podcast every week and you know the run game's terrible, then what are you really caring about? And that was something that I think that was a tense point for those two past training camp.
So there's Lawrence Taylor saying, Micah Parsons, he's going to be a Hollywood actor one day. He's got the personality. I do want to add that for the context, because I listened to the end of the clip, but saying, how about a little less podcast, a little more football?
And I mean, to be fair, not the podcast specifically, we were all saying the same things last offseason about his content trips to Japan and different things like that, about, like, dude, why are you not in there learning a new defense and being around your new defensive coordinator and different things like that? Why are you off here doing these things and prioritizing that? And I'm sure, again, some teammates probably felt that way too.
877-881-1053 in order to give us your take and hit us up on the Franklin Frankel Injury Attorney text line here on DFW Sports Station. Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, and our Cowboys insider Bobby Roberto Belt on 105.3 The Fan. Later on today, we have a Dierks Bentley ticket giveaway to hook you up with, but it is Thursday already, trying to get you to the weekend as quickly as possible, and that means it's the payload.
Oh,
why is a Texas Ranger trolling Luka Doncic? What is sticky eyes, and how you can already retire from your job before the age of 30? Peyton Russell has it all in the payload next on 105.3 The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Now, Micah Parsons has sent a call to action to the Cowboys front office. They don't frequently listen to us, but I have attempted to answer that call to action. Now, this via Nick Harris of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, who was on with Chio and Bobby this morning. It feels weird
it's
to say
Sean
and RJ.
Show,
yeah.
Even though neither one of them was there, but it's still their show. Remember whenever we would fill in for him and Gavin was like, you're still Sean and RJ? And I was like, no, we're not. And he's like, but you're their show.
Yeah.
So that's what you need to do. Say Sean and RJ, we're filling in.
So on the Sean and RJ show featuring Bobby and Chio this morning, he said, he being Micah, the talent is there. We've just got to be aggressive the same way some other teams did. I don't want to sit back, watch other teams build and build and us stay the same. Definitely some call to action. I want to see us become aggressive, get some players that will come in and make an impact. I want to see us bring back our own players. That's just as important. Let's see what we can do there. All right. Call to action for the Dallas Cowboys. I've decided to answer that call in a very unique fashion.
Okay. Can I ask you a question before?
Yes, please.
Do you think it's going to work? Do you think that him saying this is going to work with Steven and Jerry?
Actually, there is a scenario in which I think it works. And that is, you know, the thought is that Mike would make at least 35, maybe, I don't know, 38, 39 million per year. All right. Micah goes up to them and says, I will do 32 a year. That is how I think the call to action starts to work.
But I need you to do this with the money.
Now, I'm not advising Micah Parsons to do that because Lord knows, get your money when you can get your money. I'm just saying, realistically, my answer is no, unless this specific scenario happens. So I'm going to try to jumpstart the Cowboys' heart and make it happen for them. And I do this courtesy of Dan Parr with NFL.com. And I started thinking about this, and I was like, well, let's see if we can find out a way to make this work.
He's a very even-keeled guy.
You go to, it's not on par, it's Dan Carr.
Oh, okay. I thought you said Dan Parr.
So, with a number 12 pick in the 2025 draft, Ashton Jeanty is the selection for the Cleveland Browns because the Dallas Cowboys have sent the Cleveland Browns this year's first and next year's first for Myles effing Garrett. Now, I know what you're thinking. It's not going to happen. And you might be right, but Micah made a call to action, so we're trying to answer it. All right, so you trade your two first-round picks, you get Myles Garrett. I do believe that if Micah Parsons found out they were going to get Myles Garrett, he'd be like, I don't know what that cut would look like, but I definitely think he'd be like, okay, let's talk about the money.
Okay.
Maybe we'll scale it down just a little bit. All right. But what is Myles Garrett actually going to cost you? Money-wise, not draft pick-wise. I do believe that he would end up costing you 2 years, $40 million, with the potential for a dead cap hit of $10 million. Now, if you're giving up two first round draft picks,
469 says they don't have the money.
They 100% have the money. We can get back into that.
Yeah, he explained this all yesterday.
They 100% can make the money if they want. And if you're like, they have negative $2.6 million in the cap, I hear you. Yeah. Yesterday,
he unloaded it yesterday.
You got to $65 million in like 2 minutes. So if you wanted to make that happen, you're looking at 2 for $40 with a $10 million dead cap hit on the backside of it. However, if you're giving up two first round picks, surely there would be some restructuring of that deal. And I don't think you're going to end up, obviously, with any dead money outside of the 2 years. I think it would be closer to 2 years, $35
million
that you're taking on for Myles Garrett. And so now, for Myles Garrett, you're paying him $17.5 million per year.
Okay.
Which is obviously
a nice number for that guy.
For a player of his caliber is really low. Now, in reality, he's getting more cash than that. But on your cap, which is all we really care about. Well, before we go any further, what would you guys think of that? Because clearly this team has a lot of holes. And this kind of works against the idea of, hey, let's not give all our money to just a few people. And I'm like, hey, I'm going to instead bring in another huge money person.
Is there any way, shape, or form that I can get away with not giving up two ones?
I think so.
Okay. Because if I can work with Cleveland and enough and not give up two ones, I'm really okay with this deal.
Okay. You give up your first. Now,
because all along I've been saying, if I'm going to give up two ones, then I'm flipping Micah in order to get those back. So I have a premier, still have a premier pass rusher.
And again, you have the opportunity to do that. That feels like potentially a waste of time because now instead you just got an older player. Although I guess we've seen precedent of that recently for how a Dallas sports team might make that happen.
But if I can part with a 1 and a 3 or a 1 and a 2, I'm good with that.
You cannot.
Okay.
So what it would actually probably cost, if you don't want to do 2 1s, you have to do at least your 1 this year, your 2 this year, your 2 next year, and maybe a 3.
Oh, that is steep.
That's what I'm saying. If you don't want to do it.
And I got to pay him some monies.
Yeah, that is true.
But I got to pay players money. More likely, the Joneses are going to say draft players are cheaper. And so, can we find a player like that? I'm gonna say no to this.
Okay,
Kevin. I'm gonna say no. I appreciate your efforts.
Then
it's a lot of work you've done.
Look, and I get it. From the 972, hell now. I'm pretty sure it means hell no.
Yeah.
But you understand who's gonna run the ball for us? We still need a receiver. We need linebackers. We need a safety. I'm also gonna go ahead and trade your 3rd round pick for Cooper Kupp. All right, so I am wheeling and dealing while we're at it.
You know what? Hey, let's go.
People said,
shake it up, baby.
They were tired.
Trade Luka.
The Cowboy. That already happened.
Oh, okay.
Trade him back to us. Man, okay, let me serious sidebar question that's not related whatsoever.
If they trade him back to us, we'll give him a Hurtado beef sandwich.
So the Mavericks,
yes,
trade for Luka, and they trade Max Christie, Anthony Davis, next year's 1st round pick, and a 2029 draft pick.
What are you doing right now?
And their 2031 draft pick. Do you think people would accept it because Luka's back?
Nope.
Or would they be like, the hell? We just did this freaking deal and you gave him 2 extra 1st round picks? And their response would be because Anthony Davis is hurt.
Yes. I think everybody would lose their damn minds.
Okay.
I don't think anybody would be happy that Luka's back. They'd just be like, what are we even doing?
Don't do that. Okay, then don't do that. All right. So here's why I'm answering the call to action like this. Because people get annoyed that the Cowboys don't do anything
right
in free agency.
Yeah, we're trying to shake it up.
Yeah, people get annoyed that all we do is re-sign our own draft picks. We don't spend any money, blah, 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 blah. So I'm like, hey, let's go big. Because Cooper Kupp would have to rework parts of his contract as well. I think that will be facilitated for when he's traded. But I'm like, you know what? Go get Myles Garrett. Go get Cooper Kupp. Because the question or the discussion was, who's going to run the ball? You need another wide receiver. All right. I just got you the most dominant pair of defensive ends. Maybe, not probably not in the history of the NFL, but like it's pretty high up there in the history of the NFL. The reigning defensive player of the year. I know you have injury concerns about Cooper Kupp, but I just got you your other wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Now you still need a running back. But again, I've facilitated a lot of open money for you.
Yeah, bring back Rico.
And the reason, and I do kind of wonder if that could happen. Here's the reason why I wanted to bring it up, Corey, because this is kind of an extreme version of the opposite side. Because like people really don't like the way the Cowboys do business. So I'm like, all right, let's go all the way the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trading away your first for Myles Garrett. I'm trading away another pick for Cooper Kupp. I'm flipping switches on the salary cap that could hurt you in 26, 27, and 28. But to you, at least,
mm-hmm.
I bet a lot of other people, that doesn't feel great either, does it?
Losing the 1st round picks is, you know, really tough. But you have made a bunch of moves.
I did.
Now change this. All right. Give me T. Higgins instead of Kupp.
Okay.
Can you do that?
I can.
All right. I'm happy now.
I can make that happen.
We'll go re-sign Rico for $6 million and we're ready to rock.
And from the 469, Kupp won't cost more than the 5th rounder. That is strictly dependent on how they restructure his contract.
Yeah.
Because if they don't restructure his contract, well, then you're right. It'll probably cost even less than that. But if they do, I think it has the potential to cost more than that. Now, for T. Higgins, that's the direction that you want to go?
Yeah. Let's make T. Higgins happen.
All right. T. Higgins.
I want him and CeeDee Lamb signed to massive contracts.
Okay. I can get that done for you if you're willing to live with the potential repercussions in the future. Do you think you are willing to live with those repercussions?
Without knowing them? Blind nil? Let's go.
That's right. All right. Great. I can get T. Higgins on this team next year for $10 to $12 million.
Wow. I love it.
Now,
I have no clue how you're doing this. I love it.
Here's the issue. And here's what drives people crazy about the way the Jones family does business. Because I know the response is going to be, T. Higgins isn't going to sign for $10 to $12 million. Agreed. He's probably looking for, I don't know, five for 125, something like that.
The other thing, though, is a lot of the way the Joneses look at it is, why would I spend this money if I don't know what my draft pick is going to be yet?
Sure.
Let's wait till we get to the draft. Let's fill some holes. Wait till we get to the draft because maybe they get the kid out of Arizona. You know, like maybe we get one of these other guys. So, but keep running with this idea.
And so the reason why I said that is because who gives a crap what the actual contract looks like? How is it structured?
Okay.
So if you're like, oh, we just gave T. Higgins five for $125 million. That's $25 million a year. CeeDee Lamb makes $35 million. That's $60 million. Great. But in reality, there's a switch that they're going to flip on CeeDee Lamb's contract as well that I think drops it to, I don't know, like $26 million, give or take. And then I can get you T. Higgins for $10 million. So now your salary cap hit for those two is $36 million. Do you feel like you have one of the best 1-2 combinations wide receiver-wise in the entire
Absolutely.
League?
Absolutely.
All right. So the concept...
Hopefully my quarterback can get him the ball.
Okay, and that's a great point. And that, look, for a lot of people, I know it's all going to be, you still have Dak, so I'm a pass. I get that. Well, or not pass.
Mm-hmm.
So I get all that. My point is, you can 100% do that next year. However, you're going to have to deal with the implications of if CeeDee Lamb doesn't work out, you're going to have a big dead money charge coming up, but it's not going to be until 2029 mm-hmm. or maybe 28 if you want to move it up. With T. Higgins, you're going to have another big dead money charge coming up in 2029. The way that the Eagles do it, though, is they go, I'll worry about that
later,
next year or in a couple years.
And they rework the problem.
Exactly. Exactly. And the Cowboys worry about, I need to care about my 2027 salary cap right now, all right? Which is a responsible thing to do. But the way you can manipulate the salary cap in the NFL, I don't understand. Because you could make these moves for Higgins and CeeDee Lamb, and you could say, we could be screwed in 2029. But I can probably reevaluate that in 2026.
Yeah.
Or 2027.
Yeah, just keep working the problem, because not everything's going to be stuck in a conserved
yes.
All the time. It's not always going to be the same all the time. And that's what I guess we wanted, to keep the triplets together forever and keep those teams forever, and they're living with that. But it's not going to be that way. So in the next year, you just got to work the problem again.
And the reason why, and I see people saying they would rather go the route of trading Micah, there's just been no indication, like historically from the Cowboys or in everything they've said the last year or so,
yeah.
that they would actually be willing to do that. If they were, I can drop a whole new plan for you that involves you bottoming out, but piling up draft assets for this year and next
year. The only reason the Cowboys would even think about it is, how much value is the player really worth? And what can we do with it? You know, like that's, otherwise they like what Micah brings. They like Micah the player. They're hoping he continues to grow into a leader. That is what they really want. It does seem like it would go in, if you got Miles, it's a completely different direction with your leadership. But maybe they can have both of them at the same time.
So I just wanted to throw that out there for people who don't care for the way the Cowboys do it. And Micah saying this is a call to action. I've answered your call to action with like a variety of more extreme routes that you want to go.
That was extreme.
And a lot of people have texted in. I don't like that either.
Wow.
So.
Yeah. Fix the Cowboys, Kevin. But dude, don't fix it that way.
Let me tell you something. I ask Steven this all the time. I would love an opportunity to sit down with their capologist and just have a conversation.
Because what if he, like, that person gave you information that you're like, holy crap, I never thought of it that way before. That could be helpful.
100% possible.
That would be hugely helpful
it
to
really
us.
It really would. And then I would come on air and be like, all right,
I've changed my plan.
Here's why that plan doesn't work. I have learned new information, which I have no doubt exists.
Or he comes back and goes, just like I thought all along, they're idiots and I'm smarter than them. Is that, I mean, I'm not taking that shot, yeah. but I'm just saying, it sounds like something
good.
You'd say.
Could happen.
Yeah.